Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am Zach. That's John. Give me a Braves update.
Whoa. Okay. That's a fast intro. It is bottom of the sixth. Actually, we just struck out. But it is now 4-3. Tampa Bay is leading us by one as we go into the seventh inning.
What a heck of a sixth inning. Wish I could have seen it. Anyways.
I'll watch the highlights on YouTube later on tonight.
All right. Yes, that was a quick intro. Sorry about that. But I wanted to get into it, man.
Because scored all those runs between the time that we finished recording the last episode and we started recording this one. So
exactly. All right. Well, we are here. Happy Thursday, everyone.
It's another episode.
Another good one. Another real nice, sassy Stilgar episode. This is maybe my favorite of the Stilgar episodes that we've gotten so far.
Javier Bardem's face is so expressive in this episode, and I love it so much. He can simultaneously be such an expressive actor, or just like the most deadpan, emotionless person.
Yeah, for sure.
Beautiful. Love all of his work.
We are, of course, talking about minute 28 through 29 of Dune Part 2, and it starts off, we are fresh on the heels of Paul basically saying, hey, Chani's right, my mom's trained to do this, I don't want to be your savior, just teach me how to swing a sword, please.
Teach me how to Dougie.
Yes. and then Chani, we get like one of the most pissed off looks from Chani right here.
Oh, yeah.
Which is going to be, I think, a recurring theme of that character.
Oh, yeah.
So, Chani's looking pissed at Paul. Literally looks him up and down.
Yeah. And both of the groups are kind of in their own stunned silences for different reasons.
Yeah.
And we see why Stilgar's group is so stunned here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we immediately cut to kind of like a side meeting. Like a little powwow huddle that he's got going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Where
presumably a little bit later, they've stopped.
Everyone's chilled out. Everyone's dispersed.
Yeah.
But still, and the boys are having this little powwow. And he, in Jacobsa, says, the Mahdi is too humble to say that he is the Mahdi. Even more reason to know he is, as written. Once again, the he's are capitalized.
Yep.
And the eyes for all of the other men in this group, they're stunned. They're looking amongst each other. They're like, holy shit, it's happening. Like, ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a couple things on this. I think this is really the start of Stilgar's big dive into fanaticism. Well, that we see on screen. He's been getting there for a while now. It's been a little bit reserved since... or up until now.
Maybe I would have said during the small council with the elders.
Yes, but he is not as fervent.
This is the first adrenaline shot in that dive, for sure.
Yeah.
But I would have said the moment that he said that he was willing to, you know,
give his life or whatever.
Give his life for him or whatever it was that he exactly said. Like that, when you get to that point, you would definitely say fanaticism.
Yeah. The second point that I wanted to make sure gets said here, and this is I think an appropriate part, is religious fanatics will overlook blatant truths in order to fit the world to their narrative.
No.
I'm sure glad we don't have to deal with anything like that in real life.
Why would we ever?
So, I hate when movies are irrelevant like this. I go to the movies to be taken out of the world. I don't want to like think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, we now will talk. I'm sad. Sorry. Sorry about that. We will cut away from that conversation as quickly as the movie cuts away from Stilgar's conversation. And we cut back to Fetus Cam.
Fetus Cam.
And we hear Paul's voice. How are you? Now, thankfully, he's not talking to the baby.
Not yet.
Not yet. He's talking to Jessica because we hear her say, better.
We see, like, the fucking baby shift as Jessica's talking to, which I think is a good little, you know, attention to detail moment.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, Jessica is shifting as she's talking, I'm sure, and, like, we see that here.
Yep. Again, well, great casting also, on the fetus. Great casting.
Fucking 10 out of 10 acting. What we also see, though, is little bits of spice floating around in the amniotic fluid.
Yeah. Ooh, no, I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's subtle.
Okay.
But it's there.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And once again, we cut to our now 15-ish week gestation fetus. It hasn't been that long. What's up with that?
You know, whatever makes the movie go forward, right?
Sure.
And of course, Paul's not just concerned about his mother. He is concerned about his sister as well. So he goes, how is she? Referring to Jessica's baby. And Jessica gives a more detailed answer than you would expect.
Yeah.
She goes, she was frightened, but she's okay.
She's okay. Which, in fairness, follows the books.
Yes, absolutely. It does.
Know, and it sticks to what we talked about with Jessica having to, you know, calm Alia and the presence of Alia. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that they kind of, you know, did a more subdued callback to the books in that case.
Yeah. And even without this, the whole agony and water of life stuff, I think it tracks with Jessica's character, what we know of Jessica's character and just the Bene Gesserit overall, that they would be able to sense these kinds of things with their child.
Sure.
So it's not crazy outlandish that she says this, but it is far more detailed than I would expect any, like a mother that lives today to give.
Yeah. Well, even in part one, like we see Jessica sensing Paul's emotions.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's true.
It wouldn't, that's not a, I don't think that's a far stretch to have to, you know, jump to conclusions there.
Fair enough.
But then the conversation takes a very different turn.
Yes. Jessica drops maybe one of the biggest bombs we've gotten in the movie so far. She says,
and we're not even 30 minutes in.
You know? No. She says, Paul, she talks to me. She believes in you. Really burying the lead there, buddy. She talks to you? What the fuck?
The way that she says it, too, she's terrified of the fact that Alia talks to her.
Yeah.
She's like, Paul, she talks to me.
This is... So now that you mentioned earlier this week that the agony scene was heavily influenced by The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of other horror movie, like tropes or just themes and stuff. And we're still kind of getting those here.
Yeah. A little bit.
Jessica is starting to look insane.
Oh, she's looking rough right here.
Yeah. Yeah. She's gone through a whole lot. So it's understandable that she's looking, you know, weathered at the moment.
She's not done her hair in a couple of days and you can tell.
But I'm talking specifically more just her mannerisms. Like she is looking like she needs to be in like a mental institution or something.
Oh, well, just wait until her next line.
Yeah. Then she says she believes in you. And we get the eerie music. It kind of starts to creep back up.
Yeah.
And I don't have the words written down. So what does she say after
she this? Says, Kwisatz Haderach, show us the way. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into this. Is Alia controlling Jessica at this point? Because the demeanor in which Jessica speaks before she says, compared to after, two very different ways of speaking.
I think you're reading into that the appropriate level.
Okay.
Couple of corroborating pieces of evidence.
Because, like, yes, Alia is conscious and she is aware and she has, you know, she's preborn at this point, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think she has necessarily the willpower per se to overcome Jessica.
Probably not, but
not yet.
But here's my evidence that I think you're on the right path.
Yeah.
In the books, there is a moment towards the end of the ordeal, the agony, excuse me, where the young Reverend Romalo speaks through Jessica. So, and we saw that obviously a lot in prophecy.
Yeah. Where, and that's why I had that mm-hmm. thought, but those were ancestors.
Sure.
Not this fetus.
Yeah.
But conversely, the fetus is literally physically attached to Jessica.
Sure. Sure.
So it also wouldn't.
Yeah. Thinking about the scene.
Maybe it's just an interesting way of thinking about, I don't know.
Well, thinking about this scene from that perspective, I can see that this is a much, or it makes Jessica's behavior make a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
And this is purely headcanon.
Sure.
But I think that makes sense.
And this is where the minute format really fucks us, because the minute ends right here, because I can compare to what she then says later.
Yeah.
But I guess you're going to have to come back to tomorrow's episode. Yeah,
we'll talk a bit more about this tomorrow. So the only book notes that I had for today was something you mentioned earlier, preborn.
Yes.
So this is a, as far as I know, not a scientific term in our real world. I don't think this happens. But what this is referring to is, you know, Jessica's baby is preborn. She has,
she's conscious. She's has conscious. Memory. And, she's aware.
Yeah. I turned to the Dune Wiki. Shout out to the Dune Wiki for this. And the explanation or the definition that I got for this is a fetus that is preborn is able to browse the full ancestral memory long before actual birth.
She's just sitting there on her own version of Google, just fucking.
Yeah. She got the Fremen Wikipedia and she's just been, you know, going.
Fremenpedia.
Fremenpedia, yeah. And she's just clicking every blue link.
Turning them all purple, baby. Yep.
And just, you know, going through the history.
She's hitting F12 in. Inspecting all the elements.
Absolutely.
Looking in network diagnostics and traffic.
What else are you going to do? You're a fetus.
You're just chilling otherwise. Like,
yeah. You're growing. You're developing. You kind of like a tadpole sometimes. That's fine. You got all your ancestral knowledge to go through. It's like how we all kind of felt those first 2 weeks of lockdown. So one thing that is interesting to note, and this will come up not this movie, but next movie. Mm. Or if you've seen the 84 Lynch movie, this will come up. Or you've seen
the Dune sci-fi miniseries.
Yes, this has already been explored, but we will not explore this in this movie at all.
And that is honestly one of the biggest shames of it all.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Well,
but a preborn person is highly susceptible to being overpowered by an ancestral memory or an ego, and can go insane. So I'm just going to leave that there. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. That is one of the big downsides.
A little nugget for y'all to chew on.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the downsides of being preborn. I can't think of many others, but that is one of the big ones. So that's what's
not
happening.
Guaranteed though.
Not guaranteed.
In fairness.
No, but it is highly susceptible. They are highly susceptible to that kind of stuff. Well, anything else from your side before we end and come back tomorrow to round out the week?
Nothing else, because we were so unfortunately cut off by a rude 60 seconds. So I guess we'll have to talk about the next minute tomorrow.
All right.
As always, you can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. Don't forget to share the show with your friends. And if you're on Apple iTunes or if you're on Apple Podcasts, rate the show. Drop some comments. Hopefully we can, you know, get some more outreach with some more audience with all that kind of stuff. For those of you that have been listening, that are the OGs, we love you. For those of you that are new, we love you. We'll talk to you later.
All right, see ya.